Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and it's your anecdotal census of people's history of the New York City area from 2000 to 2010. Today, your stories of change in your Westchester County communities. And let's begin here. As in previous weeks, when we focused on the New York suburbs, one trending change is standing out as a boogeyman of greater New York. It's really two trending changes. One is rising property taxes, which we'll also talk about this hour. But the other one is the McMansion. The outsized home built from property line to property line, appearing garish and out of place to others in the area who've been there before. We've gotten plenty of stories from McMansion haters. Now we want calls from McMansion dwellers for a part of our anecdotal census hour for this week. Would your home be considered a McMansion? If so, call in and tell us why you like it. And talk back to the people who think it's gross. 212-433-WNYC is our phone number. 212-433-9692. If you live in a home that others might derisively call a McMansion. Like, check out these posts from our anecdotal census Westchester page that came in over the last week. They're both from Scarsdale, as it happens. Donnie from Scarsdale writes, as older residents in Scarsdale die or move away, developers buy up larger plots of land with one elegant home and destroy them to build three or four monstrosities for a hefty profit. I know this sounds a little dire, but I do feel like I'm watching the erosion of Scarsdale, a town known for its wealth, into a less than desirable collection of McMansions and cul-de-sacs. So that's from Donnie. Then Marjorie from Scarsdale followed up. To take Donnie's comment one step further, she writes, it seems that these days, even if a house is sold to a family as opposed to a developer, the new owner won't simply remodel, they will tear it down. Just this month on my block, a beautiful, distinctive home went down. I lived on the block for 10 years, and this has happened to five other homes on the block. And she writes, this trend is all the more remarkable given the prices of homes. People are literally paying millions of dollars just to get the land, and they do this even though taxes and traffic in this town are worse than ever before. So that's one way that McMansions are changing the suburbs. Wealthy areas like Scarsdale that used to have more homes with lots of land are being subdivided to build cookie-cutter McMansions and create more density. We've gotten lots of complaints as well from less affluent suburbs where people say moderate size older homes on a little bit of property with a tree or a lawn are being torn down by new owners and replaced with big, ugly McMansions that are just property line to property line house. More house, less greenery, more status symbol architecture, the critics say, less homey design. But those are the complaints. So if you live in a home that others would call a McMansion, call in and tell us why you like it. And interestingly, no calls are coming in right now at 212-433-WNYC. So don't feel too much on the defensive here. We're going to let you tell your story of your house. But do you feel other neighbors, older neighbors maybe, peering in your window or walking down the block, snorting and thinking, oh, stupid McMansion? And you want to have your say? This is your opportunity to have your say. 212-433-9692. Nobody's going to call your names. 212-433-9692. What is it for you? Is it all about the space inside? It's definitely got higher ceilings and more square footage than the ranch or the colonial it replaced. 212-433-9692. Are you anti-lawn? There's certainly nothing progressive about the suburban American lawn, right? Little patch of grass that's over-fertilized and isn't used for anything anyway. Maybe a bigger living room means more to you than a little lawn. Is that how you feel? If you live in a home that others would call a McMansion, call in and tell us why you like it. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. If you've bought an existing home and torn it down to build a bigger one in its place, we seriously want to hear from you. Everyone else loves to hate the McMansions, but They wouldn't be so reviled if they weren't so popular. So don't take this knock on your lifestyle silently. Call in and talk back to those who would look down their noses at your house. 212-433-WNYC. Now calls are coming in. 212-433-9692 if you own a house that others would call a McMansion. Let's see if Bob in Pound Ridge is calling for this reason. Hi, Bob. You're on WNYC. How you doing?
Hi, I'm doing this well. I don't have a McMansion. I have seen those around. I really just called the change I noticed in the county is White Plains now has a skyline, and 10 years it definitely doesn't. It didn't 10 years ago. I think after the 9/11 attack, companies came to value the idea of having their people dispersed across the region rather in one big centralized office. And I think some of the satellite communities have benefited from that.
Thank you very much, Bob. In fact, I think we're going to have one of our guests this hour who will be coming up say that there's more commuting now into Westchester than out of Westchester. I don't know if I have that right, because that stat stated that way sounds a little implausible. But you may well be right that people, perhaps as a result of 9/11 and some other things, are trying to decentralize the business district of the greater New York area rather than keep it more centralized. So we will follow up on that. Thank you very much. Let's try. How about Lily in Rockaway? Lily, you're on WNYC. Hi, Lily.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Do you consider your home, or would others consider it, a McMansion?
Probably. It's over 4,000 square feet, so I think that qualifies.
And so what was there before? Is it new?
It actually was, it is brand new. We came into it brand new. We're out in western New Jersey. We live in an area that was a mining community and just forests. Everybody on our block actually has newer homes, but around the corner there are older homes. And
smaller
we
homes.
Chose to live out here, and we uh-huh. love it. We absolutely love it. We love not having leaks and breaks and problems
right.
with our roof.
So that's
like
the
we
newness. That's the newness of it. And what about yeah. design? Did you build more house on your property and have less property or less lawn?
No, we have a lot of property, and we have lots of lawn, and we have lots of trees, and it's a very proportional house to the lottage. So it's really lovely, and we work really, really hard. I think the point is when you work really, really hard all day, we're both physicians, we come home, we're very comfortable, we have no worries as far as any, you know, just those things that happen with older houses, because we live
yeah.
in an older house,
so
and it's just really hard
right.
to keep up.
So it's
and
about
money
the newness. Lily, thank you so much. Ellen in Montville, you're on WNYC. Hi, Ellen.
Hi, I'm sorry, it's Helen.
Helen, my apology.
Oh, that's all right. Well, what I was going to say is we live in about a 4,000 square foot home on a half an acre, and there's about 40 homes in our development. And what I really like about having less property is that within very short walking distance, our children can play with so many other children.
So that just puts you in a neighborhood. But what about the kind of house? What was on that property before?
Nothing. You know, trees.
Ah, right. So it's sprawl. And what about the term McMansion? Because I think you called in to tell our screener you live in a McMansion. Do you see other people kind of, you know, snorting at you and say, oh, they're stupid, ugly McMansions?
Yeah, my in-laws.
What do they say?
Oh, they think it has no character and it's too big for the lot, and you know they don't like it.
And what do you say?
I think it's great. I think you don't need that much of a yard. There's plenty of room for, you know, playing outside and, you know, inside which you spend most of your time and most of the seasons. You know, you spend them inside. Each room is big enough to feel really comfortable, and the 9-foot ceilings make you feel like bright and airy and good.
Ellen, thank you very much. Anne in Mamaroneck. Hi, Anne. You're on WNYC.
Hi. I am embarrassed to admit, but I am the owner of a McMansion. And part of it is the trade-off. If there was a 2,300 square foot house in this price range that I could afford, wish that was old and charming and renovated, I would have taken it in a second. Mm-hmm. But those options aren't out there in the denser, older communities, Westchester suburbs that we found so attractive.
And so what makes it a McMansion in your case?
I think it's the fact that it's a tear down and that it takes up more of the property than the house that was there before. I think it's really, it's borderline. It's not mm-hmm. one of these egregious cases, mm-hmm. but when my friends come from Brooklyn, in my head, I know that they're thinking McMansion.
How about the other people on the block? Are they thinking McMansion? And
no.
What are you doing to my neighborhood?
No, because some of the property value is so high that some people, you know, they're building out themselves. And those older homes that are renovated mm-hmm. are worth a lot more. You know, there's a real premium on that because they're beautiful and they've got a nice, you know, they're on a nice piece of property. This is a little less desirable because there's less property.
And Ann, since you're in Westchester, if you want to take a shot at our broader question, what's the biggest change that you've seen in your Westchester community over the last 10 years, other than this?
We're new to the area, so I can only compare it to Brooklyn.
That's a change. Ann, thank you very much. All right, one more on this before we go on to some other things. Irene in Scarsdale, you're a real estate agent?
I am.
You sell McMansions?
I do.
What's the appeal?
And well, there was a couple of things that I wanted to comment on. One, I'm a 30-year resident of Scarsdale, and I live in a house built in 1919, a Tudor that's charming and beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Scarsdale, I feel from the two comments that you started the program with, is not as those people described. The bulk, and I mean 90% of Scarsdale, are older, charming homes that are not McMansions and are quite beautiful. They are correct. There are streets that houses have been taken down and a couple of houses put on those lots. So I just wanted to begin by saying that is not
okay.
Scarsdale.
Okay? Right.
Then I wanted to just mention that the people who buy those houses, who I sell them to, are as nice as the people who buy the small 1,800 square foot home. They just have more money and they can spend it and buy a larger house. Many McMansions, I agree, are not attractive. But Scarsdale now, first of all, does not allow anyone to tear down a house that's 100 years old. So none of the older homes are being torn down. They're not allowed to anymore, unless it's a special circumstance. Many of the houses that have been torn down that the people are complaining about are ugly. They really are. So it's not like they're being replaced. They're replacing a beautiful, charming house. And I'm not saying there haven't been mm-hmm. pretty houses that have been knocked down. That's why the law changed. Also, there's an FAR, a floor area ratio, that Scarsdale has imposed and many other towns in Westchester have imposed. And that means that a house can't be larger than what is proportional. So that you don't see a house, as you said correctly, Brian, earlier, taking up the entire lot. So I think that
at least in your town.
Excuse me, no, in many, many towns in Westchester, there's a floor area ratio now imposed.
And that's a reaction to the McMansions that
Absolutely.
Were being built.
Absolutely. I'm not saying that what you said did not occur uh-huh. in Scarsdale and in other
but,
towns.
But there's a policy-level reaction to it now.
Yes, there is.
All right. Irene, thank you very much. All right, we'll continue in a minute with more of your anecdotal census. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and it's your anecdotal census, a people's history of the New York City area from 2000 to 2010. We heard the case for McMansions, and we're done with that part of the hour. Today, your anecdotal census comes to Westchester. What's the most important change of any kind in your Westchester community over the last 10 years? If you live anywhere from Yonkers to Katona, New Rochelle to North Salem, Portchester, Peekskill, anywhere, call us up. What's the most important change in your Westchester community over the last 10 years? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Some demographic trends. Westchester is now more than a quarter foreign-born, more than a third non-white. Portchester has become the first majority Latino town, or right at 50%, and we'll talk about an innovative election system to ensure Portchester Latinos at least one seat on the village board. We've been collecting your stories online on our Westchester Anecdotal Census page at WNYC.org. We've got Sarah from Yonkers, who says the development on the waterfront and the Esplanade Walk along Warburton Avenue have really made a difference in the sense of community here in the northwest part of Yonkers. It's a working neighborhood close to Metro North, so most people never knew their neighbors. But I think that this area is more family-friendly and open because of the new public spaces. Then we have Walter from Hastings-on-Hudson, who writes, school taxes have gone up 100% in 10 years. The implication is severe pressure on elders and lower-income trades and civil service workers. They are precious to the fabric of our diverse and funky community, and they are being driven from town by the tax. The irony is we value education as paramount, and we love investing in all the kids, but the economic model isn't working, writes Walter from Hastings-on-Hudson. And we'll follow up on that comment with the county executive, Rob Astorino, in a little while. But with us now, Lisa Keller, history professor at SUNY Purchase, who studies Westchester County, among other things. Hello, Professor Keller. Welcome to WNYC.
Good morning, Brian.
And before we get into ethnic change, did I get this right? Did you tell my producer that more workers now commute into Westchester County than out of it?
Yes, and I'm surprised that you're surprised, given the fact that you know so much census data has come as a vast change. In 2006, the American Community Survey, what's called the Longitudinal Employer Household Dynamics Program, counted 400,000 jobs in Westchester County. 200,000 of those holding the jobs lived in the county, which means almost 50% commuted into the county. However, only 84,000 Westchesterites commuted into New York City.
Hmm.
So in terms of the actual workforce, yes, Westchester's a dynamic force in bringing people into the county to work.
And maybe you heard the earlier caller who said the biggest change in his town, which is White Plains, is that White Plains has a skyline, which indicates the office buildings and more jobs are locating there. And he pegged it to 9/11. He said some, you know, his implication was some of the finance companies and I guess other companies where they figure, well, the workers aren't going to want to commute into Manhattan anymore with a bullseye on it, are looking for other locations. You think that's a big reason?
Well, those tall buildings are actually mostly residential.
Uh-huh.
So Westchester's filled with office parks, which have had an up and down history over the last decade. I will say Westchester has shown a peculiar resilience to economic downturns, even though they have had some high rates of lack of occupancy. They've recovered after a period of time. The county's been very aggressive in trying to attract business. But I don't see the connection with 9/11 because of that. But I will say that the housing is very interesting, that people would choose to live in a tower in White Plains rather than a single-family home.
And what about population trends? I gave, you know, some top-line statistics about ethnic change. We're certainly going to hear from the county executive later about his concern about people who are leaving Westchester because of property taxes. So who's coming, who's going?
Well, Mr. Astorino is right that property taxes remain a critical linchpin in attracting people or people leaving. But the real amazing change is indeed the diversity of population, which has increased beyond anyone's expectations or predictions. In 1970, 2% of the county had been Hispanic. In 2010, the figures, of course, aren't in, but it's very possible that Hispanic figure might reach as high as 25%. If that is the case, the 2006 American Community Survey estimate was it had reached 20%. Local experts say there's a 0.5 to 1% rise per year. If that's the case, then that 25% might be reached. If you add the 15% African American population and the slightly less than 5%, you are talking about something approaching a 40% minority population of what has traditionally been considered one of the most idyllic commuter suburban counties, which shows that the picture has changed very much.
Ruth in New Rochelle, I think, is calling about one of those high-rise residential towers. Hi, Ruth.
Hi. Yes, we do have a beautiful, very attractive high-rise residential building in downtown New Rochelle, which has changed the landscape, and it's Trump Tower. And New Rochelle also has become a wonderful city for the arts. Each year through our library, we read a book, and it's called One City, One Book, and people in the community all get together for activities about this book. And we also have New Rochelle Opera, which delights us with programs all year. And this weekend, they're putting on Turnadout, and it's a professional company.
All right. I'm going to leave it there, Ruth. Thank you very much. New Rochelle also changing ethnically quite a bit. Right, Professor Keller?
New Rochelle actually has one of the oldest Latino populations in the county. There was there's a wonderful story about how one man came from Mexico, and Manuel Duran, and has essentially helped bring many people from his community in Mexico and many other Latinos into Westchester and into New Rochelle, and there is now a very vibrant downtown community. I do want to say that communities like New Rochelle and Portchester, which had a lot of problems with their downtowns, have revitalized because of these large new ethnic populations.
Raul from Peekskill writes on our page, Peekskill has gotten a lot more violent in the last 10 years, be it violence in the schools or in the streets late at night. The youth have now, or think they are supposed to have, a thug gangster mentality and carry a very self-centered disposition. Having grown up with such people, I believe this is due to a combination of, one, glorification of this behavior in music, songs, and videos and movies, two, a migration of real thugs to Peekskill from more violent southern Westchester communities and the Bronx, who see Peekskill as ripe for the plucking, and three, a lack of successful adult mentors to serve as positive role models and inspiration, writes Raul from Peekskill. But Mary, also from Peekskill, writes, since 10 years ago, Peekskill has bloomed into an artists' center with a diverse music scene, including jazz clubs on Division Street, the Peekskill Playhouse monthly performances, and the Bean Runner Cafe on Division, the opening of the Peekskill Music and Museum, and film, music, visual art, performance at the historic restored Paramount Center for the Arts. And so two very different views of Peekskill from different people posting on our anecdotal census page for Westchester. Professor Keller, Westchester has long been under court scrutiny for housing desegregation this past decade and for decades before. And there was some kind of settlement in a major case about that last year, right?
Yeah, this settlement promises to be either groundbreaking in reshaping American history or a complete dud. At the moment, it's not clear which way it's going to go. But the settlement itself provides for something that has almost never happened in American history, which is mandated affordable housing, that local communities will have no choice whatsoever. According to the settlement, it is a settlement, not a court case, mm-hmm. that Westchester County agreed to when Andy Spano was county executive. And this would affect, according to my calculations, approximately half of every single community in Westchester, which would be mandated to create housing. There was a racial component to this. A community that is less than 3% black and less than 5%. I'm reversing my numbers. Would have to increase the amount of housing. So two dozen communities are going to have to put up housing. The county is responsible for paying for part of that. It is not clear where the remainder of the money will come from, nor is it clear what will each community do to help this settlement. The current county executive, Mr. Astorino, will be engaged in trying to deal with the solution for this. And I know there is a court-appointed person who is to assist with this.
And does this relate to the change that we've been talking about that's taking place in Westchester County, or is this just an old standing problem that grinds on and on?
Well, that's an interesting question. I've interviewed a number of people about this, and some people operate under a conspiracy theory that Westchester was targeted for this. I don't think this reflects any recent changes. You might remember that in the 1980s, the Yonkers desegregation case was one of the most famous in the nation for requiring that Yonkers erect affordable housing and desegregate because of a willful pattern. Everyone at the time thought this would change all housing patterns, but in fact it didn't have any effect outside of Westchester. Former County Executive Andy Spano tried very hard to get the communities to get affordable housing. This has been a very old issue for many, many decades. Westchester County is no different from any other American county, which says you have the right to choose where you live, the income groups you live with, the kind of place you live. The court's saying, hold on, if you start zoning for 2 acres and above, you'll never get multiple occupancy dwelling, and de facto will cut out minorities and prevent any diversity.
Now, since we had that comment on New Rochelle, our board has filled up with people who want to talk about New Rochelle. And I'm going to take a couple of them because I think that the issues that Ruth raised about change in New Rochelle with the high rise that you also raised and that some of these people are going to take issue with kind of go for other communities as well. But just let's hear some of these callers briefly. Diana in New Rochelle, thanks for calling.
Yes, and I posted my comment also online, but I wanted to refute what Ruth. Ruth thinks that the high-rises are beautiful. I think they have negatively destroyed and changed the suburban environment of downtown New Rochelle in the past 10 years. Plus, the developer Capelli was given huge tax breaks, no tax for many years, to the detriment of tax about us, and I'm a property owner, and our budgets, and a lot of these apartments aren't rented. The city has separated the tax for the garbage and library from their regular budget, so now we have a separate tax for each of those. The school tax has far eclipsed the property tax here in New Rochelle. I mean, so that the taxes are so egregious, we pay 5 taxes, including the Westchester County tax, and I don't think we even need a separate Westchester County bureaucracy. It can be eliminated just like other communities have done.
Diana.
Yes, the arts are wonderful here, and I'm a member of that community, but these other things are negatively impact living here.
Diana, thank you. Rob in New Rochelle, you're on WNYC. Hi, Rob.
Hi. Well, I guess I would agree with a little bit of both callers, and I come from a perspective of having worked for many years as a public relations consultant with a lot of New Rochelle organizations, but also as a commercial real estate agent. I worked with a lot of developers and became a commercial real estate agent. And I see both the opportunities, the attractions, and the challenges of New Rochelle. I've seen a lot of change in the community. I think the addition of the high-rises have been a real plus. We have a business improvement district, which has really done a lot to change the downtown area and to make it a destination point. And it's a great central location, New Rochelle. The demographics are definitely changing, and I think for people who are relocating from the city, they find New Rochelle very attractive because of its proximity to the city, but also because if they're moving here because they want to put their kids in suburban schools, they're going to go into a school district that has a lot of diversity, and that's going to offer a lot of opportunities and exposures comparable to what they get in the city, but hopefully at a smaller classroom size and maybe with richer resources.
Rob, thank you. Now, he is a commercial real estate agent. Dominic in New Rochelle is going to get the last word in this thread. And, Dominic, I gather you take a very different view of the public schools.
Yes, Brian, thank you for taking my call. I've been a New Rochelle resident for over 40 years. I find that New Rochelle and Westchester is becoming Queens. Most of the residents here who are leaving had no voice. The county executive who settled this low-income 700-unit-plus in Westchester low-income housing basically hit the community in the head with an anvil and sideswiped it because it's not the will of the people. Now you're going to have people stuck in this county subsidizing poverty like you have in this bankrupt state. I'm moving this summer to the main line in Pennsylvania. I'm getting out of Westchester. I think this is bad. The voices, like my voices, are being drowned out throughout the state, throughout the county. And there's no reason to turn Westchester, New Rochelle, and all the surrounding areas into a poor inner city community.
Dominic, thank you. And so, Lisa Keller, a representation of some of the tensions, socioeconomic and ethnic, I would say, that have come to the fore.
Very much so. Let me correct a couple of things. These 750 mandated units are not for the poor. It's affordable income, and there will be a median income selection, as there always has been. Regarding the high-rises in New Rochelle, New Rochelle was faced with a daunting prospect of a dying downtown. And when the developers approached many years ago to build these towers, it was because the housing market in New York City had cut out so many younger people. One of the developers, Avalon, studied the market very carefully and said that because these buildings are next to the train station, they could help revitalize the downtown by building these next to the train station. They're all rental units and doing a good business, and it has helped. I will also say that many of those high-rise developments, New Rochelle has been better than some other communities, are tied into also affordable housing commitments. And New Rochelle will get none of the mandated units from that court decision because New Rochelle is very integrated in its housing.
Lisa Keller, history professor at SUNY Purchase, who studies Westchester County, among other things. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Brian.
It's your anecdotal census of people's history of the New York City area from 2000 to 2010. Today, your anecdotal census stories from Westchester. The biggest changes in the last 10 years in your Westchester communities at 212-433-WNYC. And with Westchester becoming more diverse, Westchester Community College is seeing a changing student population. And so with us briefly now are Teresita Wiesel, Associate Dean of a new program at the school called the Gateway Center, and Leslie Rodriguez, a recent honors graduate student of Westchester Community College, who is going on to a four-year school. She was born in Guatemala. Teresita, Leslie, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Leslie, can you tell us a little of your story? When did your family come from Guatemala, and where in Westchester do they live?
My family and I, which that would be my mom and I, came in 2002, and we came to live in Portchester. And then for me to go to high school, my mom moved to White Plains because she heard great things about White Plains High School, and we're back in Portchester.
How was White Plains High School?
It was such a great experience because it has such a diverse community, a lot of Hispanics, and I felt very at home. Not that I didn't in Portchester, but I just think for a transition, it was very good.
Did you happen to hear the last caller who was concerned that Westchester is becoming Queens, as he put it, and is becoming a place where taxpayers support poor people?
I actually did not get that. There are so many things that you hear nowadays, and it's hard to give an opinion on that, especially because it's our community that I suppose is being
seen
I'm
that
not
way.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, what can I ask? What does your mom do or did do for work when you were growing up?
She took care of one of our grandfather's hotels. And when she came here, she started working in a bakery, and she's now a waitress. She has been so for, I would say, about 6 years for the same restaurant.
Westchester has this reputation as one of the richest and most expensive counties in America. So how did you guys afford to live there?
That is a great question, especially because my mom went from paying very low rent to paying very high rent in White Plains just so I could go to high school there. And so I would say that all of the money that she earned went to rent, basically, because I know White Plains is one of the most expensive cities.
And she did it for you.
She did it for me. That's exactly right.
How? What kind of education did you get from Westchester Community College?
I think the best I could have asked for. Everywhere I go and everyone I talk to, I am sure to tell them of the great opportunities that WCC offered for me. I was able to reap the benefits of being a good student in that college and just getting involved in as many things as I could.
And Teresita, I don't know if that's your baby or somebody else's baby in the background. But
no, not mine.
I meant Leslie. But Teresita, tell us about the Gateway program. Is it a response to the needs of an increasing population of students like Leslie?
It really is, Brian. Over 10 years ago, the college recognized the changing demographics of the county, and the Gateway Center is really a response to those changes. The center, which will open in September, is a 70,000-square-foot multi-use building. It will have classroom space, a lot of student space. It will house our English as a Second Language program, which educates over 4,000 non-native speakers of English a year. But it will also house a lot of our traditional programs, and the hope is that we can be the educational resource to the new Americans in this community, but really integrate all those programs into the general program offerings at the college.
And with the recession and maybe broader economic change longer term, is Westchester Community College adjusting its mission or the specific careers that you're educating students for? We had a caller earlier who talked about the need for more vocational training, entrepreneurial training, rather than just educating people to get jobs that may or may not be there.
Absolutely. Our mission has always been to make higher education accessible and affordable to all the residents of this county and our surrounding areas. Our programs have been really with two goals in mind, either to prepare more traditional age students to begin their college careers and move on to bachelor's degrees, or to train those traditional students and also adults to be eligible for the workforce locally. So many of our programs are more skills and workforce development related, and our traditional programs are obviously geared towards being the first step in what is a four-year degree.
And Leslie, you're going to a four-year, and I gather that you're driving in a car with that you work as a nanny and you're with the mother and the baby, and that's why we can't separate you from the sound of the child. But you're going to a four-year college now?
I will be in September. I'm trying to decide where I'll be going, but my hope is to continue again and work towards getting a bachelor degree.
Congratulations. And you were an honor student at Westchester Community College. Just real briefly, as you look at others in your community, and no community produces all honors students, what do the average kids need, and is it out there for them?
You know, I think it's a lot of effort that you have to put in, especially because I went through ESL classes and I saw myself advancing and other students not doing so great, but I think it had a lot to do with the amount of effort that I put in, because the opportunities are out there, and especially the professors at Westchester Community College are just so supportive, and they really make sure that they get to know you because they want the best for you. I was more than happy to work hard because I knew that my teachers were happy and I knew that they were helping me. So it works both ways. The teachers do support you, but you have to put effort in yourself. So I think that it's possible for anybody to succeed.
Leslie Rodriguez, now on her way to a four-year school after graduating with honors at Westchester Community College, and Teresita Wiesel, Associate Dean of a new program at the school called the Gateway Center. Thank you both for coming on with us.
Thank you very much, Brian.
And more of your anecdotal census, a people's history of the New York City area from 2000 to 2010 with the county executive, Rob Astorino, and more of your calls in a minute. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. It's your anecdotal census, a people's history of the New York City area from 2000 to 2010. Today, your anecdotal census is in Westchester. Next week, by the way, Middlesex County, New Jersey, which has very interesting changes over the last 10 years. So you Middlesex listeners, you can start posting on our website and the page for your county anytime at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. But for now, what's the biggest change in the last 10 years in your Westchester community? County Executive Rob Astorino joins us now. He was just elected last fall, a change of party as well as person after Democrat Andrew Spano held that job for 12 years. County Executive, thanks for doing this. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you. Good to be back.
And we've been going county by county in the greater New York City area in this series. And in the suburban counties, we've been hearing more than anything about the twin bugaboos that people perceive of fast-rising property taxes and the proliferation of what folks consider ugly McMansions. are both these things on your radar screen as a new county executive?
Well, less so the McMansions, because that's really a land use issue for local communities. This being a home rule state, the towns and villages have their own control over local zoning, so that's really a local issue.
Okay.
I mean, it's all subjective, clearly. I mean, some of these things are ugly, and some of these things maybe spruce up a neighborhood, but that's up to each individual town.
And property taxes, are they not a function of localities? What can you do as a county executive to have an impact?
The property taxes are a function of many different things. The county has its own tax that it levies on county residents, and it's about 20% of the overall tax bill for Westchester. And then the local municipalities have their own tax, which is about the same, but far more services directly felt by residents. And then about 60% of the overall tax bill is school districts. And then you sprinkle in some special districts like an ambulance district or a fire district or a library district. And that's another reason when we could do a whole another show on that, on how many taxing jurisdictions there are.
But in fact, we had a caller. Well, when we did Fairfield County, Connecticut in this series, we learned that Connecticut did away with county-level government in 1960, and we had a caller earlier this hour who said, yeah, we have so many taxing jurisdictions, we should just do away with county government. I don't want to put you out of work, but what is...
That's a very interesting argument, and I'm not saying that I would necessarily oppose that. Massachusetts had a referendum about 10 years ago, and it allowed each county to abolish itself if the voters so chose. Half of the counties in Massachusetts did so. Rhode Island has limited or no county government anymore, and as you know, you just mentioned Connecticut doesn't. The counties in New York are the creatures of state government, and so the state would have to abolish counties, and let's face it, they're never going to do that. So it's fun to talk about maybe over a couple of beers, but it's never going to happen.
And I guess people are conflicted about local taxes because voters in most of the school districts in Westchester approved their school budgets in the recent elections. So they're concerned about property taxes but value a well-funded education. In fact, let me read you one of the posts that we got on our page for Westchester County. Walter from Hastings writes, school taxes have gone up 100% in 10 years. The implication is severe pressure on elders and lower-income trades and civil service workers. They are precious to the fabric of our diverse and funky community, and they are being driven from town by the tax. But he writes, the irony is we value education as paramount, and we love investing in all the kids, but the economic model isn't working.
Agreed. And that's where the changes have to be made at all levels of government. You look at the spending and the federal government spending and taxation and debt in the state, and it's the same in the county. I came in January 1. I was told in transition that we had a $60 million deficit for 2011. It's actually $166 million deficit and counting, which means we have to make some really tough choices and really change the structure of county government and save the system, if you will. I mean, we're looking at, you know, eliminating some very low-performing bus routes. You can imagine that's not popular, but you know what? In order to save the system and provide the transportation needed by the poorest of the poor, we have to look at some really, you know, the routes that aren't performing anymore. No one's riding the routes. It's costing too much. And we've got these, you know, discussions all year, and it's not going to be easy. But you talk about education. This year, almost all of the budgets in Westchester passed, and they did so because, for the first time that I could remember in a very long time, schools came in with 0% tax increases. Some schools, my school in Mount Pleasant School District, actually reduced spending year to year, which is unheard of. And so they were rewarded in many ways by the voters. You did have some 2, 3, 4% tax increases, which is relatively high given the economy. But for the most part, they were supported. But I think people now are willing to look at everything and say, do we need it? Do we need it at this level? And that's really the frank discussion that we've got to have, because we're losing, you know, we're losing the tax base. People are leaving, and we've got more and more people who need services, and that's not a good mixture. And so we've got to take a really good, hard look at what we're providing on all levels of government, and whether, by the way, and I think you were starting to allude to this as the previous person had written, do we need county government at all? Well, we've got to start looking at all these layers of government and figuring out where we can consolidate. The town of Ossining is looking at abolishing its own police force. Now, granted, their police force is 17 members, so it's not that large, but it's $3 million a year for their residents, and they're looking at either abolishing it and joining with the village of Ossining or the village of Briarcliff, their neighboring communities, or signing a contract with the county to provide police services, which would be as good or better. It would be a $2 million contract, so the county taxpayer wouldn't lose anything. The town would gain in protection and would have a $1 million decrease in its budget. That's significant, but that's really the way we got to think.
Yeah, that's really fascinating, because those are examples of the consolidation that nobody really wants, but that the pressure with the rising taxes and the deficits in this recession are forcing people to think about anew. Another thing that we talked about a lot over the hour is how the county is becoming more ethnically diverse. I gather this census might show upwards of 40% non-white now and more than a quarter foreign-born. Do you see part of your job as county executive as managing diversity and providing for different needs of different communities?
Oh, absolutely. You know, we have a very large and growing Hispanic population, many from Latin America coming into Westchester. And, you know, I guess one of the advantages is I speak Spanish, and we've been communicating very effectively, I think, and I enjoy it very much, whether it's a church on Sunday where I go and listen to Mass in Spanish and then speak with everybody afterwards in like a community room with cake and coffee, or just going out into the communities. I was in Peekskill this morning for a meeting with local Chamber of Commerce presidents, and I was going down the street, and literally every store on both sides were in Spanish. All the storefront writing was in Espanol. And it just shows you the changing face of the county and, of course, the state and the country.
Do you have a problem with that? Because some people, you know, some English-speaking residents feel threatened by seeing Spanish-only signs.
No, I don't think I don't think people should see it as threatening. But the interesting thing with the conversation I had with the chamber is they felt they're trying to reach out to these Hispanic-run businesses, and they've been getting resistance from the Hispanic business because they either don't know the services that are available, why they should join the chamber and help their business. So they're trying to have a dialogue, and it's been a very interesting dynamic. And I think that's what the county has to do and reach out and say, we have an economic development team that can assist any business, and it doesn't matter where you are or what you speak. We want people to prosper. We want people to, you know, quite frankly, to have a business that succeeds so they can employ people, pay taxes, and it helps everyone.
County Executive, hang on one sec, because you mentioned Ossining.
Yeah.
And I think we're going to finish up here with a caller from Ossining, Catherine, who has a story from her community over the last decade. Catherine, you got to do it very briefly. Catherine, you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Go ahead. Tell us your high school story.
Okay, it's actually really cute. We were forced to get rid of our high school mascot, the Indian.
Yes, the Indian.
Yeah. And he was much beloved by the community, and there really has been, you know, a lot of fight in the community to bring back the Indian. And I think that it's caused us to be a better small town. You know, we go out for more of the local elections. We talk about it. We argue about it. You know, we're a really funny small town.
But at the expense of the Indians, Catherine, no?
Oh, you have to understand, our mascot, he was very regal. He was very, like, he was a noble-looking guy. He wasn't, you know...
He wasn't the
cartoon.
He wasn't the Cleveland Indians maniacally smiling face. Catherine, what's your ethnic group?
I don't like that question. I'm Caucasian.
Would you like the how about the Austining High School Caucasians?
You know what though? I'm Irish. And can you think of like the Fighting Irish?
I know, Notre Dame.
That little mascot could be more ridiculous.
Catherine, thank you very much. And Rob Astorino, you get 10 seconds for any last word. What's the change over the next 10 years?
Oh, I think the population is going to continue to grow from the Hispanic society, and we'll adapt. You know, I think everyone is welcome.
Thank you very much, County Executive Rob Astorino.
Thank you very much.
We appreciate it. Next week, your anecdotal census goes to Middlesex County, New Jersey. You can start posting your Middlesex stories on our page now. Lisa Allison, Jody Evergan, Paige Cowett, and Rachel Senator produced this program with intern help from Alana Casanova-Burgess, Noah Litvin, and Janet Kim. Senior producer Megan Ryan, Debbie Fountain at the audio controls. I'm Brian Lehrer.